All right, Assessy disqualified briefly. My name is Jamie and I am an alcoholic. I wasn't an alcoholic and then I drank alcohol and then I became an alcoholic. And it took me places that I never dreamed I would go. I didn't put it on my resume as a child, grow up, drink, do things that absolutely demoralized my soul and my being and disconnected me from all the goodness that I knew in my life and all the goodness that I had yet to discover in my life. And the police said I wasn't a good driver while I was drunk, so I got to go to jail a few times for that. And there came a day when I was able to say uncle through the grace of God and discover the framework that this program is, like, that it gives me a design for living. And for that, I'm really grateful because my life, what I do know is that inside this room, I am a valuable child of God, and outside of these rooms, it helps me to remember that and to not drive drunk and ruin the relationships in my life. If I ruin relationships in my life today, I have a way to navigate that and to discover the stuff inside me that that does disconnect me and keeps me from being of use to myself and those around me. With that, I am going to move into introducing our speaker tonight. I think either she paid a lot of people to show up tonight, or there's a testament to this young lady's character and spirit. And when I was choosing speakers for this month, I've got Tuesdays 1, 2, and 3, and Doug's got, he's going to bring it home for birthday weekend. But when I was thinking about the people that I'd like to ask to speak this month, this young lady's spirit just kept coming to me. I haven't heard her story, and I have, I was questioning because she's just short of a year of sobriety. And, you know, traditionally speakers have a year or more. But what I do know is that this young lady is perseverant and tenacious, and she's in God right now. She's on fire. And I'm really, I've been able to be a part of her journey, and that's a blessing. I've learned things from her, and watching her grow has been a blessing. It really has. And I think that her story is important. The people that are where she's at, their stories need to be told. You know, I've had people who have 10, 20 years speak, and some of those people aren't sober anymore. And today, I want to introduce to you Erica so that we can hear her story.
Hi, everybody. My name is Erica, and I am an alcoholic. Hi, everybody. As I look around, like, I see a lot of people that love me and I love, and they're here to support me. And most people in this room loved me until I could love myself and held me up until I could stand on my own 2 feet. So I thank you all for being here. My sobriety date is October 12th, 2012. My home group is Central Orlando Group. I do have a sponsor and I have worked the steps. And an important part of my life today is I am bringing other girls through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I want to start with a little funny story. I really wasn't nervous until I stood up here, and I'm not consumed with anxiety or fear, which is a miracle, but you know, I want to start by saying the consciousness of the presence of God in my life is one of the most important facts of my life, and the consciousness to me means the mental awareness. I have the ability to see God in every aspect in all areas of my life. And last night, as I got home from a meeting, I learned there was a rat inside of my house. And typically I'd be obsessing over what I'm going to say and how I'm going to say it and how I'm going to be heard and all of that. Well, God did for me what I couldn't do for myself, and started obsessing over this rat that I named Roger. So, you know, I was grateful because I didn't have too much time to think about and worry about this. So that was pretty huge for me. So I was born October 21st, 1981 in New Orleans, Louisiana, to an alcoholic father and a codependent mother. You know, I'll just kind of leave it at that. But we moved to Florida when I was almost 3 years old. And one of my earliest memories is when I was 4 years old, and I'm going to share this story because it just speaks volumes of a lot of my experiences. And I was four. It was my cousin's birthday, and my grandmother was watching us. And I wasn't getting all the attention. Things weren't going my way, and I wasn't getting what I wanted when I wanted. So I ran away. And I walked out of the front door, and I remember walking down the block and taking a right, going to the fourth house on the right, and knocking on the door, and they let me in because they knew me as a neighborhood kid. And through the rest of my life, when I didn't get what I wanted, when I wanted, and all the attention that I thought I deserved, I ran. Even in times of sobriety, relapse has been a part of my recovery. And when I look back on that, it just speaks volumes. When it wasn't coming as quick as I thought it should come, and I wasn't getting what I wanted, I ran. So that, when I was thinking of what I was, how I was going to start, I don't want to talk too much about my childhood, but that kind of foreshadows a lot of my life. You know, I was a scared little girl a lot of the time, and I ran. I took my first drink of alcohol. I was 12 or 13 years old, and I drank to a blackout. I drank to oblivion from the very first time I consumed alcohol. I didn't drink for the taste, for the enjoyment. I drank for the effect. You know, I was always uncomfortable in my own skin. I never felt like I fit in, and alcohol worked. It worked really well. I hear people share that they've had 10 to 15 years of fun in their drinking before it got really bad. That wasn't my truth. You know, within a year, I was suffering legal consequences, emotional consequences, and every other kind of consequence that surrounded alcoholism. And I was 14 years old, and I got my first DUI, as well as 20 felonies and 3 misdemeanors. Charged as an adult. So I was suffering immediate consequences. So the next 10 to 15 years, you know, I lived in pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization. You know, alcohol worked briefly, and then it just stopped working. So outside issues are a part of my story, whether it came in powder form, pill form, liquid form, whatever it was. You know, the book talks about mixing liquor and sedatives. That was one of my truths. The alcohol stopped working early, so I used that in combination with other things and lots of other things. So I had to drop out of the eighth grade because of my legal consequences. I was homeschooled for 8th, 9th, and 10th grade, which meant my mother found a way, my codependent enabling mother, to the best of her ability. She found a program where she could mail in my grades every month, and basically we were paying for my grades. And she thought she was doing the best thing she could for me because I was busy going to 33rd Street Jail every month to see my adult probation officer and trying to adhere to the terms and conditions of my probation and community control. I had a suspended license at the age of 14 for 2.5 years. Before I even had a driver's license issued to me, it was suspended. So I went back to high school, and I was convinced that if I could get out of Lake Mary, where I grew up, that things would be different. You know, the whole geographical relocation made a lot of sense to me. And I found out that I excelled really, really well academically. So that was my ticket. That was my ticket out of the house, out of town. So I got early acceptance to an out-of-state university at the University of New Orleans. And I recall the summer before my junior year of high school, before going back, I went back to New Orleans every summer to see family, and my father took me to explore the campus of UNO, and I saw a girl laying out by the lakefront in a bathing suit, studying her textbook and drinking a beer. And I was like, yeah, this is the school for me. You know, it made total sense. So I did the best I could to get accepted into this out-of-state university, and I did. So I graduated high school and I moved to New Orleans. But where I went, there I went. You know, wherever I was, there I was. And I was trying to run away from myself, basically, and running is a huge part of everything I've done. After my first year of college, between the progression of my alcoholism and other substances, I wanted to die and didn't know how to do it. And I remember calling my mother after having a 4 to 5 day hardcore run and saying, I can't do this anymore. You know, I had my dad's gun on the table and I just didn't know how to do it. And she said, why can't you just stop? Why can't you just not drink? And I said, it's because I'm an alcoholic. Like, I can't. I can't not pick up that first drink. And once I do, I have no control over the amount that I'm going to consume. So I said, I need help. So she located a local detox center, and I drove myself, and I checked myself into detox at 19 years old. And it was like the second or third day there. Some members of Alcoholics Anonymous came in, and they brought a meeting. It was my first introduction to the Big Book and to AA, and I don't remember anything that was said or done in that meeting, except for when it came around to me, and I said, my name's Erica, and I'm an alcoholic. And I lost it. I just started bawling like a baby because it was this feeling of relief. You know, for years through my adolescence, I knew I didn't drink normally. It was told to me by a lot of people and brought to my attention. But I knew deep down in my core there was something very different about me. Like I said earlier, my father was an alcoholic, but I never saw him take a drink. He stopped drinking when I was 3 years old and we moved to Florida on his own will. Which it still baffles me, but it's true. So I never saw him take a drink, but I could tell, you know, he would pull me aside and share his experiences with me, and I knew I was an alcoholic, but I never said it until that first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting when I introduced myself to Zoe, and it was this freeing power came over me, and I just, oh, this burden had been lifted. So now that I know I'm an alcoholic and I self-admitted it, I was released from that detox, and I started attending Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, and I would get 30 days, and I would go celebrate, you know, and then I'd get 60 days, and I'd go celebrate. I was 19 years old, and I was proud of myself. I was staying sober for a month or two, and that was huge. My parents weren't so happy, being the fact that they bought me a house in New Orleans, a brand new car. They were paying out-of-state tuition fees, and everything externally, all the outside circumstances were great. You know, I was making the dean's list every semester, I was being published, all these really good things, but I was dying inside. So after 2 years of that and the inability to control and enjoy my drinking, they made me move home. So I moved back to Florida, and originally I was in college, I was pre-law. Heading to law school, and instead went to detox, moved home, and went to cosmetology school. So I changed my goals to meet my drinking, and my parents were so proud. And so I went to cosmetology school because I knew I could party the way I wanted to in that industry, and it almost killed me. So I was back in Florida for another year when I was lucky enough to attend my first inpatient rehabilitation center. And it was the first one of three. So my parents were still willing to afford, you know, to pay the bill. And it was a luxurious month away from home is what it was. And I left there and went to California. Thought that was my solution. Let me move again. I lasted 3 weeks there and came home. Because again, I went to California and there I was. And I was still an alcoholic and couldn't control and enjoy my drinking. So I came home and I came back to AA, you know. It was the only place I knew that I could go, where there were people that understood that I could not stop drinking. And I got 6 months and then drank. And then got another 6 months. And after drinking, I came back and realized I was pregnant. So I, a year out of rehab, I was pregnant with my son. And I was scared. I was really, really scared. And this was not something that I could pick my stuff up, pack my bags, and run from, because it was right there with me. And I was raised with really firm beliefs on that. So I had one option, and I was having a child. So 9 months later, I had an amazing, beautiful, healthy baby boy. And I convinced myself that this was it. This was what I had been missing. I finally had somebody that was going to love me unconditionally, no matter what I did, what I thought, of my past, any of that, and that I could love. I thought it was going to fill that hole deep inside of me, and it didn't. Even though I had an amazing child, it was not enough to keep me sober. And, you know, that's hard to say. I have a lot of, you know, emotions that come up when it comes to being a mother alcoholic. You know, my drinking affected my child in many ways. And I could not stay sober to save my life. My son was 1 year old. I went to inpatient treatment again. I came out. I could put together increments of time. In January of 2007, something really traumatic happened to me, and it scared me sober, you know. And fear will not keep this girl sober. It lasted for a while. But what my experience shows me is when the book talks about the insanity preceding the first drink, it happens way before I pick up. It was my character defects. It was the defects of character that when it's talked about in 12 and 12, it says, you know, no, never. I will never let these go. I thought that without those, I was going to be the hole in the donut. Like, those are what defines me. I was unwilling to let them go. And I drank, you know. So I stayed out for a few years after that. A couple more DUIs happened. And in June of 2011, my drinking had gotten really bad. You know, it was every day, every morning, hiding bottles under the bed, everything it's talking about in the big book. And my son was old enough to know what was going on. And in the doctor's opinion, it says the frothy emotional appeal seldom suffices. And for me, that's a valid point, because when my five-year-old's looking at me saying, Mommy, I hate when you drink alcohol because you're mean. It wasn't enough to make me stop drinking. Like, I could not. And June 11th, 2011, I got a DUI. It was my fourth DUI arrest within 15 years. And my son was in the car. It was the day before his sixth birthday. And what I can see now looking back is that it was divine intervention that I got arrested that day in front of my child, because I could have killed him, myself, and countless others. So today I'm grateful for that fourth DUI. Really wasn't enough to get me sober, though. I had to keep going. After that, you know, I had a no contact order put on me by a judge to not communicate with my child anymore, because I was a danger to him, clearly to myself. And so at that point, I tapped into a darkness. You know, it's the darkness and despair that only a true alcoholic knows, you know. And I wanted to die, but couldn't take my own life. I was, you know, I was in that in-between, and I was doing everything in my power to blot out consciousness. And I couldn't stop drinking. And that was the darkest my life had ever been. But I am grateful that, again, there were people in my life that could love me until I loved myself. And again, divine intervention. I had three people that loved me enough to stand up and say, we're not going to let you kill yourself. We're not going to let you die. And one person who is sitting in this room tonight showed up with a cop. And it was like, if you want to live, you got 24 hours to call me. And this woman had heard my very thorough fifth step, so I knew she wasn't willing to give up on me after hearing all of that. Like, okay, I can do this. And I made the call, and her and her husband came and got me. And I detoxed, and I held on for dear life, and I couldn't. And I did what I've done my whole life, and I said, I'm running. Like, packed my stuff, and I ran again. Didn't know where I was running to or what I was running to, but it was running just from that pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization. And the thing that was the hardest is it came with me. It followed me. So, and these three people that stood up for me and held me up until I could stand on my own at this particular time, they marched and acted me. And I was actually at an AA meeting, and a cop car came and picked me up and took me to our lovely lakeside and then to detox. And then I went to my third inpatient rehab facility. And I stayed there for 5 or 6 weeks until my defiance and character defects got me asked to leave nicely. So I left and I came right to AA. Like, as many times as I left the program, I always came back because I knew this was the only place for me. The only place that offered a solution for a hopeless alcoholic of my type. So I was able to put together almost 14 months, and I drank. And that was October 11th of last year was my last drink. And I really believe, for me, that I picked up again, not only because of my character defects this time. The book talks about we have to smash our old ideas. You know, and for me, it's not only regarding alcohol. It's not the idea that I can drink safely or that I'm like normal people. I had to smash every old idea that I had, any ideal, any belief, everything about myself, about God, and about everybody that I came in contact with. I had to smash it. So I have to learn things the painful way, literally beat my head on the brick wall until blood's gushing in my eyes. And I learned that lesson. And I'm really grateful that I took that last drink. Because I went to my home group the next day, and when they asked, is anybody sobriety in jeopardy, I raised my hand and I said, mine is. I don't want to drink. I don't feel this way anymore, and I'm going to die if I keep going. And in that moment, women who have done this deal before me, you know, came and pulled me aside, and, you know, these are women who show me how to live. You know, I've learned through Alcoholics Anonymous how to be a woman, how to be a mother, how to be a daughter, how to be a friend, how to be a girlfriend, how to be everything, because I didn't learn those things. I didn't have a healthy example of what a woman looked like. So they pulled me aside, and someone asked me, what are you going to do now? Now, I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous now for 13 years, so I've read this book plenty, a lot. You know, you give me a book, I'm going to read it, I'm going to study it, I'm going to recite it back to you, but it's not sinking in from my head to my heart. And I said, I don't know. And those were the wisest words that have ever come out of my mouth. Because I didn't know. Self-knowledge availed me nothing at this point. And, you know, in how it works, it says we've asked for protection and care with complete abandon. And that's not only regarding my alcoholism. I abandon every aspect of my life to my God. And I give it to Him in His protection and care. You know, those are pretty kind words in my mind. It sounds pretty appealing. And, you know, I dove back into Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, with the fervor of a dying woman. You know, I was going to die. And I was desperate. And I had been utterly defeated. And that's what it took. That's what it took for me to completely surrender myself, abandon myself, and concede to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had worked the steps before to the best of my ability, and it says half measures availed us nothing, and I feel like that's what I did. whether it was on a conscious or an unconscious level, half measures availed this hopeless alcoholic nothing. So I was honest and thorough and fearless in my steps, and I held back nothing, and I illuminated every dark cranny of my past. You know, and I have been taught that this big book is filled with so many promises. And my life is filled with so many promises. You know, if I work for them, they will materialize. And that's what I've learned. You know, I used to think, okay, I'm not drinking, all this should be wonderful. And it wasn't, and I ran back. And like Jamie said, like perseverance, it's one of the spiritual principles behind Dustin. And I kept going. No matter what, I kept going. And, you know, my favorite part of the big book is the top of page 63, and it says, when we sincerely took such a position, that position being that God is my director and I am his agent, you know, when we sincerely took this position, remarkable things follow. You know, I will lose the fear of today, tomorrow, thereafter, and will reborn. That sounded really good to me. I didn't like who I was. I didn't like what I felt like. I didn't like the things I did. And I wanted the ability to recreate my life and be reborn into a woman that God had me planned to be. So I worked the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and the 12th step says, as the result of working the steps, you have a spiritual awakening, you know? And I'm here to carry the message to the alcoholic and to practice his principles in all my affairs. And I missed that part. You know, I wanted the spiritual awakening, but I always lacked on carrying the message because I was so selfish and self-centered to the core that I really thought I had nothing to offer anybody. You know, how can I help somebody else? You know, and what I've learned about the history of our program is that in the beginning, you know, it didn't matter how many days you had, you still had something to offer to the man or woman that was walking through the door on their first day. And I had a little bit of something to offer. And, you know, my God is amazing. It tells me in the book, God is everything or he is nothing. He is or he isn't. What is your choice to be? Now, I've lost the power of choice to drink. You know, but through working these steps, the obsession to drink has been removed, and I get a choice again. You know, my choice is God is everything in my life today, and I have the ability and the awareness to see him everywhere, in everybody, and in everything. And I'm really grateful for that, because I'm really happy most of the time. And that's in spite of myself, because I was in a really dark place, and I was beyond human aid and didn't think I could come back. You know, I've had miraculous things happen in my life. Miraculous. When I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous 2 years ago, I lost the use of my right arm. They weren't sure if I was going to be able to remove it again. And I've been a hairstylist for 11 years, so it's going to be a little detrimental to my working life. I had the no contact order. I was not allowed to contact my son, who I had had in my life every day his whole life. And, because of that most recent DUI, it was my second within 3. I had a 5-year revocation of my license. And even through that DUI, there was God's grace all over it, you know? Like, I blew a .21 and was charged with less than a .15. I didn't get child endangerment, child neglect, all these charges that I should have had tacked on to that DUI. You know, I know that God has always been present in my life, whether I saw him or not. And the thing I'm most grateful for today, and why I started by saying, you know, the conscious awareness of him is the most important fact of my life, because I can see him today. I don't have to look back into my past to see where God was working, because I have the ability to see him today in the now, where my feet are. And, you know, I have the choice today that I can either stay in self-morbid reflection and stay in the past and refill shame and guilt for my past, and I don't have any shame and guilt for my past. Today, I don't regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it, because the things that I have done, experienced, and lived through is my greatest asset to a new woman walking through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous to her first meeting. You know, that's how I can win the confidence of another alcoholic woman. And I know that I had to live through all of that be, you know, to have a testimony to share with these women. And so clearly I got the use of my right arm back. And, you know, within 9 months of that no contact order, I had my son back full time living with me. And that was a, you know, that was no doing of my own other than putting one foot in front of the other and continuing to do the next right thing. And I was facing jail time as well, and I didn't have to go to jail. But my 5-year revocation, I came to accept, you know, that was a consequence. I was okay with that. I truly accepted not being able to drive, you know, and I found other means, and I was willing to go to any length to get sober, whether it was walking, taking the bus to get to a meeting every day, and to work and to take care of my child and do all of that. And I did it. And I went, it was coming close to 2 years where it was the point I was going to be, there was a possibility that I could get a worker's permit hardship. So I walked into the DMV and I went to the woman and said, what would I have to do to get a hardship? She asked my name, my social, my date of birth, and she's like, oh, you know, you've been eligible for a regular driver's license for 6 months now. And I'm like, no, ma'am. I'm in total acceptance of this. Like, you're wrong. I've accepted this. I'm okay with this. You know, I'm willing. And she's looking at me like I have 14 eyeballs on my face. And she's like, no, you've been eligible for 6 months. And I was like, okay. And I turned around and I dropped to my knees in the DMV. And I was just like, oh, thank you, God. You know? And, you know, and then in sobriety, due to paperwork issues, I was told that I was going to have a warrant for my arrest, and I was going to have to turn myself in. And I was like, whoa, wait a minute, I'm sober, you know, like, put this on hold. Don't you know I'm not drinking, I'm not doing the things I used to do, please. And I got to a place of acceptance with that. I said, okay, if I got to go into jail and carry the message to a suffering alcoholic woman in there, then that's what I'm going to do. You know, God, I hear you, and I'm willing, you know, and God is willing, this indispensable in this program. As long as I'm willing to do the right thing, remarkable things will follow. And I got the call the day before Thanksgiving, my probation officer, who I had no possibility of early terminating my probation, because I was pretty lucky just to get away with that. And she says, are you sitting down? You know, and I was at the bowling alley with friends from my home group, and I'll never forget. And I'm like, really? The day before Thanksgiving? Oh, I'm going to miss the holiday. And I had made preparations for my child and for everything, for when I had to go do this. And she says, the judge said she's going to go ahead and successfully terminate your probation early. Keep doing whatever you're doing, because you're making an amazing life for yourself and your child. And well, you know, and those are just a few of the concrete facts that if I'm willing to do the right thing and I can accept things for the way they are because I can't change them, when I sincerely take that position that God's my director and I'm just his agent, I'm just here to do whatever he'll have me do, then remarkable things follow, and they continue to follow. And, you know, I heard a speaker say this at the convention, the state convention, a few weeks ago, and it struck me to my core, you know, because we come into Alcoholics Anonymous and we just got to believe, we got to have faith, you know, blind faith. And, you know, it says in There Is a Solution, the great fact is this, you know, that I, with an absolute certainty, know that my Creator has entered into my heart and lives in a way that's indeed miraculous. And my blind faith turned into an absolute certainty. I'm not sure at what point, you know, but I have an evidence of God working in my life list, and I continue to add to it. And I have the girls that I take through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous do it as well, because it's tangible proof in my own handwriting that when things get hard, and I start to doubt that I can go back and see in my own handwriting what God has done for me and that I couldn't do for myself. And it's huge, you know, because he continues to do things daily for me, like putting a rat in my house so I don't worry about what I'm going to say when I stand up in front of a room of people and talk about myself. So You know, and that again is just a change in my perception. You know, my attitude and outlook on life was going to change. It's promised to me. You know, and these promises come true for me regularly. And I'm grateful for that.
Kind of stopped using this.
This was really huge in my sobriety. You know, I took my son to the beach in June of 2011, the day before his 6th birthday, and he got to see me drink into a blackout, get lost, the county was over, and watch his mommy get carted off to jail in a cop car. And it's pretty hard for a kid to see, and hard for a mom to watch her kid watch her do that, whatever. And, you know, almost 2 years to the date, I believe it was a week before, I got to drive in my own car to my son's school, pick him up, check him out of school for the day, and drive him to the beach with his sober mom and recreate the traumatizing, horrible memory that he had. And I got to recreate that memory with my son, same way I got to recreate my life, you know? And today, I'm fully present for my child. And I'm a mom that I can say I'm proud to be, you know? And it's only because of the giants in this room that have done it before me and have taught me how to be a woman, a sober woman, alcoholic, mother, friend, daughter, all of that, because I didn't know how to do that. And through these steps, like, my whole life, I feel like I ran from everything and everyone because I was lost. I was a scared little girl inside, and I masked it with confidence and cockiness and all that, and I was scared of myself, scared of you, scared of what I really knew deep down inside, and I didn't know how to fix it, and scared because I couldn't find anything to fill this hole, this God-shaped hole that was inside me, and I was lost. And through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, I found, you know, I was introduced to myself, and I never liked myself. I couldn't stand in front of a room of people and talk about myself because I didn't have anything worthy to talk about. You know, I wasn't proud of myself for the things that I had done, and only in Alcoholics Anonymous, my past, my greatest asset, and that I'm really grateful for. You know. And I feel like all of that was possible because in my darkest hour, I struck gold. And to me, my gift of desperation was gold. You know, because if I wasn't desperate enough to do the things that this book tells me to do in the order in which I'm supposed to do it, I never would have been introduced to myself. I never would have become the mother to my child that he deserves. I never would have been the woman that's standing up here today. You know, and through the steps, I have the most amazing relationship with God of my understanding, you know. And that is the greatest fact of my life today. And I'm blessed. I'm blessed because not only all these miracles happened in my life and I got to see them and be aware of them, but now I get to take girls through the steps. And I get to see these things happen in their lives. And it's amazing. It's amazing when they call me and say, "You're never going to believe this." Yeah, I am. Because my God is all-powerful, omnipotent, everywhere, and changes judges' minds, changes state laws and regulations. And it's changed for me to be a woman who doesn't have to drink alcohol one day at a time. So I'm grateful. Thanks for letting me share.